is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 735. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined with my guest co-host, Mr. Carl Gonzalez.
Gonzalez, I love it. Hola, mis amigos.
That's Carl Gonzalez. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air.
Hurry and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Suddenly. It is Wednesday, August 30th, 2023, and on the show today we have Deaf Austin Theater and their production of The Laramie Project, and then later on we'll be talking to the folks at The Vortex and their dance show, which is devised, called Mother Tree. And of course we have a lively news and discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, and Albuquerque, New Mexico. Don't go away. Suddenly, Carl Gonzalez.
That's it. I love it. You know, no one's ever misspelled my name like that, so well, I'll appreciate that, and I'll allow it.
Okay, I'm just going to say it's probably a cut-and-paste error left from last week's show.
Fair.
And that Y probably was just there. But I like it, Gonzalez. You should consider changing your name.
I'll think about it.
So, Carl, welcome back to being co-hosted Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you for having
me. It's like putting on a comfortable pair of gloves, I'm guessing.
I love it. I love these gloves.
Yeah. So, what's been up? What's new with you?
Oh, nothing too much. Just working, trying to live that artist life, and you know, doing the show.
Well, I hear tell you have a new directing announcement that you're doing.
Oh yeah, so there's this like company called Ground Floor Theater.
Well, that's not what I was talking about, but you can talk about that as well.
I'm not sure which one you're talking about, but
I
yeah.
don't know. You did something. I don't look at social media, but there I was looking at social media, and there you were saying you were doing this other show.
I guess
what you were talking about is Clyde's by Lynn Nottage that we're doing at Ground Floor Theater in the spring.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be co-directing with my partner Lacey. Mm-hmm. You might meet her one day.
I hope I do. Do you know what the other show I'm talking about is?
I think I'm going to be working with Different Stages and The Library.
I think that's what
that's
I was
the one
about.
You're talking about.
Well, Mazel Tov.
Thank you.
So we played Suddenly Seymour. That was Jonathan Groff, and I forget her name. Who
Blanchard something, right?
Yeah. I can't remember her name.
Sure, that'll be it.
Which is the current incarnation of the Off Broadway at the West Side Arts that was scheduled to open with. Jeremy Jordan.
That's right.
Before the pandemic hit. And they had been going through lots of people playing Seymour and Audrey.
I'm excited for this round, though. I think it's going to be fun.
So currently, I can't remember who it is currently, but coming into the role is Corbin Blue. And Constance Wu.
Yes.
They're calling it Blue Wu.
Blue Wu. I love it. How original.
Constance Wu was in Crazy Rich Asians, amongst other things. I think this is her first major theatrical appearance.
She did a production of this play called 222 in Los Angeles, I
remember
think.
Hearing about 222.
It was fantastic.
It just closed.
I didn't see her, but the play is great. Uh-huh.
Well, so those of us who are at a certain age can't help but remember Room 222.
Room 222?
Yeah, with Karen Valentine. It was a sitcom. And then Corbin Blue, who's done lots of different things. You know, it just dawned on me, I did not introduce the other folks that are here with us in the room. So I'm going to do that. I was wondering, why isn't anybody else chiming in? Because we have not told people that other people are here. So let me introduce them. This is the crew from Deaf Austin Theater's production of Laramie Project. And making a return visit here and was sitting in your seat just a couple weeks ago, Dr. Brian Cheslick.
Doctor.
Exactly. It's the important part of my name now. Yep. First and last name is not important, but the doctor part, that's the important part. Hello, everybody.
And I'm also going to introduce right now Miriam Rockford, who is the stage manager of the show.
Hello.
And both Miriam and Brian will be acting as interpreters for the next four people who I'm about to introduce. So you'll hear them voicing for these other folks. We have the director of the Laramie Project, Jules Dameron.
Hello, everyone. Good to hear from you.
And then three of the performers, Kaylin Aaron Lozano.
Hi,
and Kaylin
everyone.
Is actually also the Dazzle.
Oh.
Our director of artistic sign language.
Excellent. Thank you. Joey Antonio.
Hi. Hi, everyone. What's up?
And Justin Jackerson.
Hello. Thrilled to be here. What's up, Austin?
Wonderful. We're just going to continue our conversation. Before we move on, we were just talking about Little Shop of Horrors with Corbin Blue and Constance Wu joining. Mm-hmm. Anybody want to say anything about that since I didn't give you an opportunity before?
I was just thinking about the recent, or maybe it was not so recent, discussion related to the fact that Seymour is a nerd and they always have these hot guys playing him.
There's a lot of people talking about that.
I think it's an interesting topic of discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And I think that he is a nerd, but it's also that they're doing star turns here. So currently starring in it right now is Jeremy Jordan, a pre-mentioned, and Joy Woods. Yeah. But you're right. I know that one of the podcasts I listen to is like somebody's like really upset that they're just putting another hot guy in the Seymour position.
I mean, I'm ready. Let's put me in that position, you know?
You're hot.
I know, right?
What do you think of that, Carl? You have an opinion?
I do have an opinion. I do think Dr. Brian is also very attractive, so that's, you know, wouldn't be fair. But no, I've actually talked about this with my partner, Lacey, is that both Audrey and Seymour have always been like, you know, the, I guess it's the European acceptance of good looking, whatever that would be. So it was like skinny and so on. That's how it is, right?
I don't know. I've never heard the definition.
I'm sorry. That's like, you know, European standards, I guess, like, of good. I don't know.
Maybe as I'm opposed just to American sort of a, standards?
Well, I mean,
this is Joey. That's right, baby. You say it.
I did. Okay. Okay.
It.
I did
you say it.
It. Okay, no, I think this is going to be a long discussion. But yeah, basically, I'm agreeing with you, with Dr. Brian, is that it's always, you know, skinny, buff people. And I'm like, you know what? I would like to take a shot at Seymour one day, me being a tall, big Latin man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. And I'll tell you, they did a good job with Rick Moranis, who is nerdy looking.
I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm. I think Jules wanted to say something.
This is Jules. I would love to play that role, too. I'm a newly out trans gay man, and I am down to play Seymour. I mean, I feel like that's me all the way. We're not talking about me. We're talking about Jeremy Jordan, right?
We're talking about Jeremy Jordan, and now we're talking about you.
Yeah. And how long ago was it they did it with MJ Rodriguez?
It was not all that long ago, and that was an amazing MJ Rodriguez and what was
George Salazar?
George Salazar,
yeah.
And to see the video, I just saw. I guess it was Suddenly Seymour. It's just an amazing.
It almost makes this more disappointing because it was so good, and then we're just going back to the regular standards.
Well, that was Pasadena Playhouse, and it's
yes,
not
it
that we're going back. These were happening at the same time, if you remember. They happened
oh,
at the
that's
same
true.
Time,
you're right.
And mm-hmm. there was a lot of people talking about how, you know, that Pasadena Playhouse did a great job of representation.
Yes,
they did. Oh, yes.
And Off-Broadway is doing Off-Broadway.
Yeah.
Well, lots to talk about there. I'm going to switch gears. That's okay. Has anybody here seen Drunk Shakespeare?
Yeah.
You've seen it? So we do have a company here in Austin.
Yet. No, I haven't.
Oh, I've heard a little bit about it. That was Joey.
So there is a company here in Austin, but they have unionized, and they've actually unionized. They had previously unionized in their companies in Chicago, Phoenix, and Washington, D.C. The New York companies just voted to unionize, and what I found really great about this is that the producing company has voluntarily recognized them. I mean, there was no...
Right.
There was no trying to push the unions out. And Equity is the union that is recognizing them. What I also find interesting is it's not only the performers that are being represented by Equity, but the bartenders and everybody involved in the show, which I think is interesting.
That's really exciting. I think that hopefully everything goes well there.
Well, and we were talking about this before, if you remember the adult dancers who wanted to unionize and they chose Equity as the representation. Yeah. At the time, Nicole and I talked about it, and that seemed like an odd fit for Equity to pick up when AGVA is the union that typically handles variety artists. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about Equity taking on more roles than actors and stage managers. Some of us from the stage management profession, and Miriam, feel free to jump in. Not quite sure, you know, that Equity is the right representation for stage managers because they sort of blur the line between management and performers.
Yeah,
Miriam, do you have an opinion? You are an Equity stage manager.
I actually love the fact that stage managers are part of Equity because we are the ones who are enforcing the rules,
yep,
and ensuring that the actors are protected by following those union rules. And for us to also be subject to those rules, I think is actually really helpful,
yeah,
because I know the rules much better now because not only do they apply to me, but also it helps me ensure that the actors are not being taken advantage of.
Sure. I don't disagree with that. Although when I was in New York as an Equity stage manager, there was a group of us that were thinking that IA might have been the better representation, but who knows?
I mean, that's actually a fantastic point though, too.
And yet there's still always that line where,
yeah,
you know, because you are by your title is stage manager, so you are by definition management. So it does skirt the line, but I take Miriam's point precisely, and I agree with it.
Oh, she's amazing. I mean, she's been my go-to person. I'm like, hey, what's the rule on this? And literally, Miriam already knows the page number of the handbook for me to look at, and she sends me the screenshot.
Wow.
Like, dang, girl.
Okay, we don't have a whole bunch of time. You know what? I want to talk about this. There's a musical that you wouldn't, you know, there's always these musicals that pop up and you go, it seems like an interesting topic for a musical, but it is a Tiananmen Square, a brave and necessary new musical is what it's titled.
You might have to give me a rundown because I haven't. Mm-hmm. I was looking at the list and that was the one thing that I wasn't sure what's happening.
Okay, so you might remember in the 80s the riot in Tiananmen Square in Beijing, China.
Right.
It had the iconic photograph or the footage of the young man standing in front of a tank.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's happened in Tiananmen Square. So they're making a musical out of it. It's being done at the Phoenix Theater Company in Phoenix, Arizona, in October. It's got a book by Scott Elmgreen and a score by Drew Fornola.
Wait, is this a musical that had some backlash, or am I getting mixed up here?
It doesn't have backlash. They announced 2 days ago the lead, which was going to be Zachary Noah Pizer. And then the next day, he sent an Instagram saying he's not doing the show with no explanation. So that's still there. I think he just had other works. He's like a handsome young man.
Very.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's handsome. I'm saying I'm showing everybody here in the studio
what
he looks
handsome.
Like. I'm just going to throw that down there. anyway, it's described as this. Tiananmen sets the love story against the backdrop of the 1989 student protests in Tiananmen Square that were violently suppressed by the Chinese Communist Party. It's directed by Darren Lee. But I just think that looks interesting.
It does.
And, you know, we always have these shows like we talked about Parades, like the murder of Leo Frank and the lynching of Leo Frank Robert. I just lost his name.
Jason Robert Brown.
Jason Robert Brown, thank you.
Okay.
Sat down and said, this will make a nice musical. And it does.
Yes,
it's an amazing musical. So so that's interesting. That's that. I'm not going to get I dropped my keyboard for those of you listening.
Would you like me to pick it up for you while you talk?
No, I'm just going to let it sit there. So a couple of other things, and then we're going to talk about SB 12, which I know Deaf Austin Theater is really sort of in the middle of. But COVID is back these days. Have y'all noticed that?
Did it ever really leave?
Well, it never left, but it's you're starting to see masking, and people are starting to take steps. And one of the steps that's happening right now is that Shucked musical is no longer allowing people to be at the stage door.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's getting to the point where they're starting to take steps again, which is kind of scary for me.
Yeah, for real.
They said, the Shucked producer said, in an abundance of caution, all post-show stage door activities at Shucked have been paused until further notice. We appreciate your support and can't wait to see you at the Nederlander soon. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens and where it goes. So,
Kaylin, I feel like that's probably going to become a domino effect. If one theater starts that policy and amps up their protections, other theater companies might additionally do that to avoid spread. I mean, that tradition of waiting for the stage door could even dissipate. And I wonder what would replace that waiting for the stage door. Maybe some sort of new fan interaction would develop. I don't know what the possibility is, but we'll see, because COVID is never going away. It's just in hiding. It's waiting to come out of the closet again, and who knows when that's going to happen.
It's one of those situations where I don't want people to come out of the closet.
I was about to say
exactly.
The same thing.
Exactly,
stay in COVID.
Stay, please stay.
You are not welcome here.
Yeah, that's not going to do anybody any good. Stay in the closet. As someone who runs a theater, it's like, I don't want to go through that again. And in March of 2020, that was such a heartbreaking decision. And we, Ground Floor Theater, decided to close about 4 or 5 days before everybody else closed. And it was rough. And we had a brand new company in the theater, we had to stop it. Yeah.
This is Justin. They should create, that's a great title for a musical. They should write a musical, March 2020.
We'll do it. We'll devise it right now.
This is Jules. I would love to share something to tag onto that. It's really interesting to share. The March 2020 was really, really hard for all of us. And trying to create art virtually over Zoom. There were lots of different organizations trying to figure out how to survive in transitioning to this virtual platform. And I think actually for the deaf community, it pulled us all together a little bit more. It's really cool to see how that happened.
I know the Deaf Austin Theater did a whole bunch of really wonderful work virtually.
Yeah, we would try to find new ways to stay current. So we made like weekly murder mysteries on YouTube.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was fun. It kind of kept us all like mentally stable
during the
pandemic.
I think there was a lot of that going around. And then now there's if I never see another Zoom performance, I'll be very, very happy. But it did make, in terms of accessibility, like Ground Floor Theater will now always stream every show that we are allowed to make sure that it's accessible. And it's no longer about being safe. It's about being accessible.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. SB 12. We talked about this last week. We're going to talk about it again this week because it's set to go into law in just a few days. Tomorrow.
The first.
30 days. Has September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 31. So day after tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I have to sing for my supper. So SB 12 is what we call the drag ban. It's already been passed in, I think, 5 other states, and it's already been torn down in those 5 other states. And so here we are and doing it again. There's several lawsuits happening in Texas to try to get it stripped out. But it's interesting, when I read the article, and it's linked at offstageonair.com, when I there's an article in the Texas Tribune by William Melhado who talked about it. And one of the things he says is that that it doesn't explicitly say drag. They took those explicit words out, but it is in the subtext. And yet, the in the words of the, I'm now actually looking at the bill itself, and I've got to find the actual words. And I thought I, but it basically says, any man that dresses as a woman, any woman that dresses as a man, is considered sexually explicit. I want to find the actual words in the bill. Oh, there it is. Okay. It is.
This is Jules. What?
Yeah, that's what. So here's. Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
So it's the bill basically says it does not allow sexually explicit material to be shown in front of children. And in the definition of sexually explicit, among others, it says features. Sexual oriented performance means visual performance that, one, features a performer who is nude as defined by Section 102.051, Business and Commercial Code, or B, a male performer exhibiting as a female, or a female performer exhibiting as a male who uses clothing, makeup, or other similar physical markers and who sings, lip syncs, dances, or otherwise performs before an audience and appeals to the purient interest in sex. So that says to me, drag.
I mean, that's what they're trying to do. I think, well, I mean, not trying, it's successful. Plus the fact that there's so much gray in that area already that it's even more dangerous, to where it can just be people who want to be prejudiced, homophobic,
true,
towards a certain person, even for wearing something that they deem inappropriate or not your gender. Like, yeah, it's
but
disgusting.
My issue is what they're saying, rather, this is the bill.
This is Jules. What does that mean for trans people as well? Who haven't transitioned, who are in the process of transitioning.
Right. It doesn't fare well. So if you are a trans man and you have a prosthetic, that would be considered sexually explicit by the as in my reading of the law. So not good.
Mm-mm.
And it also would then go to the point of, if you're doing Shakespeare, and you know, you're doing it a la Shakespeare with all men in the role and they're wearing fake bosoms and things like that, then that also does it.
There's, or even going to musicals like Tootsie, La Cage aux Folles. Well, granted, there's probably issues with that as well, but it's disgusting.
This is Kaylin. Also, I think it means that the trans community might be afraid to go out and have fun. For example, karaoke, performing in front of a stage could be considered under that law. Things like that. That's ridiculous.
Thank you. Yes, I agree. So we need to fight the law. There's ACLU, along with a lot of people, including the Vortex Theater, who's here with us later today, are fighting these laws get them to put an injunction against the law. So it's right now with a judge, and they can either permanently say, nope, we can't go with this, or they can put a temporary injunction. There's lots of different things. So bottom line is, we have to fight for our right to be, for our freedom of speech. And this is indeed a freedom of speech issue. Mm-hmm. And our artistic integrity, and fight against hate. So I should say, and I probably should have said earlier, that the opinions expressed on Offstage and On the Air are not those of Co-op, its board of directors, or its staff. Merely, it's my and my guests' opinions about the things that are going on. I have to move on because we are already running late, and I want to make sure we have enough time to talk about you guys and what you're doing. I did want to say just very quickly, there's an article about Deaf West, which I think maybe some of you people have worked with. You people. Some of my guests have worked with. I apologize for that wording. I'm terrible. Sorry. But it's a really short little blurb about Deaf West doing a musical called Love, Lies, and What Could Be. It's going to be an industry reading that's happening on September 8th in New York. And so that's going to be produced by Deaf West and directed by Jeff Calhoun. Features a book by Ivan Menchel and music and lyrics by Caroline Kay. Music direction is Rick Hip Flores. Are any of y'all familiar with that?
This is Joey. Yes, I was supposed to be involved, but I'm not sure if I can officially announce. But I'm involved in that process. It's a great story. It's a really sweet little love story, a love triangle story, actually, with one deaf and two hearing lead characters. And one of the hearing characters is a coda, and that's all I can really throw out right now.
What does coda mean?
Oh, it means child of deaf adults.
Awesome. Well, that's amazing. Congratulations, or whatever, however you want. I'm congratulating you. The last thing I want to say before we go to break, because that's going to inform our song, Kennedy Center is doing a concert version of Tick, Tick, Boom, and it's going to be directed by NPH.
Oh, that's your favorite musical, isn't it?
Carl was alluding to the fact that I'm not crazy about the musical Tick, Tick, Boom. But let's hear some music from it while we take a break.
I would love to hear some
music. And we'll hear a little bit of the Green, Green Dress. We'll be right back.
Green dress, oh, what it can do.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Carl today. Nicole, hopefully, will be back next week. That's the hope. Nobody has a comment on that. Never mind.
I mean, I love Nicole. But, yeah, Nicole's awesome. If I can prevent her from coming back and then I take over her spot,
and I could do it. You know,
I'm gonna stop and reintroduce our guests so that we can talk about the Laramie Project. We have Deaf Austin Theater's artistic director, Dr. Brian Cheslick.
Hello, hello, hello.
Or as I've written it, Brian Cheslick, parenthetical doctor. We have the director of the show, Jules Dameron.
Hello, everyone.
We have the stage manager, Miriam Rockford.
Hi.
We have the dazzle, Kaylin Aaron Lozano. And
hello, hello, hello.
Kaylin's also in it, performing? Question mark?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Just a small role. Anything to help the vision, you know?
I just want to say that...
Actually, Brian, myself, and Kaylin are all in the show as production staff.
Okay, never mind then. Everybody's in it. And I will say that, Kaylin, you nodded your answer just a moment ago. And even though you speak American Sign Language, nodding does not work on the radio.
Oh, right.
Radio waves.
Hello.
Kaylin is nodding right now.
We also have Justin Jackerson.
Hello.
And Joey Antonio.
What's up?
So, Jules, tell us about the Laramie Project. What is it?
Well, right now, the Laramie Project has been produced for 23 years since the year 2000 when it was originally published. And this is the time with everything that's happening politically and socially. We felt it was a great opportunity for the deaf community who hasn't really been exposed to this sort of historic information and story because we need language access and cultural access. So we're doing a deaf take on the Laramie Project. My current vision is to have a deaf culture interpretation of the Laramie Project. So we are making it come across stronger for the deaf audience. And I would argue that if we only did it straight up what is in the script, exactly what they're saying and doing in terms of word for word English to ASL or hearing culture, I would argue that our story would not come through to the deaf audience, which is the goal, in my personal opinion. So we are hoping that it will hit more closely to home with a cultural interpretation in addition to a linguistic interpretation. So the history of Matthew Shepard from the story, which happened in October 1988, he was murdered through a hate crime, and that's the story that we're hoping to tell.
Yeah. And Brian, you're the artistic director of Deaf Austin Theater, and you brought this. You told me that this is the very first time this has ever been translated into American Sign Language.
Professionally. One university did it several years ago. But we are the first professional company to produce it in ASL with professional actors.
So tell folks, I don't know. I know we've talked about it on the show before because we featured a lot of deaf performances. But explain to the audience about ASL, and it's not just a strict one-for-one between English, that ASL is indeed its own language and its own syntax.
Yeah, basically, as Jules mentioned, English to ASL. ASL is its own separate language, its own separate grammatical structure, everything. There is sign language, there is sign English, which is like word for word for word, signing exact in English word order. But many people assume that sign language is an equivalent to English. It's not. It's a separate language. So we have to basically translate it into ASL to make it more clear to deaf audiences, because for many deaf people, English is not their first language. ASL is. And so just by captions or by signing an English word order, just the sign, many deaf people don't understand that. I think Kaylin has you want to add something as well.
Yes, this is Kaylin. I would love to piggyback on to what Brian just said. We are making more conceptual sense for the deaf audience out there. English is like playing a piano. You play every note one at a time, and every word is one note. So you're plugging out note by note, key by key, to form a linear sentence. Whereas ASL, one note is one grammatical part of a sign. So the sign, based on movement or location or palm orientation, facial expression, et cetera, can add additional meaning. So all of those different features of ASL, instead of doing key by key, you can sign one concept all at the same time with one sign, creating more of a chord. So you can hit one concept at a time, concept by concept, chord by chord by chord, to create an equivalent meaning. So that's a deaf that is a deaf artist named Christine Sun Kim. Christine Sun Kim. Thank you, Joey, for the assist. I'm not a great speller, but that concept is from Christine Sun Kim, who is a deaf artist, and I think that's just a great way to capture the difference between English and ASL.
Well, that's amazing. That just tells me that ASL has just so many more notes than English does.
Yeah. ASL is the whole orchestration and the symphony, whereas just plucking out the keys in English is boring.
That's great. So, Joey and Justin, tell us about, y'all are strictly performers in this piece, although I would argue that nobody is just strictly a performer in this piece, but tell us how this this piece has been for you as actors.
This is Joey. Whew, what a loaded question. To be honest, being involved in this process, you've got to understand, I was language deprived until I was 25. I had no access to sign language until I was 25.
Wow.
And I have seen Laramie Project, the movie, but without access, I captured, you know, I could get the emotion, but I really didn't understand the depth of the story until I came into this room. And it was huge for me, making all these connections and really finally understanding and starting to forgive was a big part of my process with this show, starting to forgive and understand. I didn't have access to this story and this information, and so trying to forgive myself for not understanding the gravity of the story and how it impacted the world until much later, making those connections. But this play has been an incredible experience for me overall. This is Justin. It's been a really interesting experience for me, because I came from another show in a role where I played a character that, like, one character that I stayed the whole time, and now I'm playing like six different characters, and there are some characters with whom I have opposing views and whose values are against my personal values as a gay deaf man. It is really hard to create that mental shift sometimes. We really have to look at the story as a whole. It's not just about Matthew, but it's about society and it's about this town and how we fail our children regularly. And I think it's a very important reminder that hate is not the answer. It is never the answer. Hear, hear, says Kaylin.
It is. I agree with you, Justin. It is never the answer. And yet, so many people think it's the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in states like ours.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate, but it's such an important message. And the overall message of this piece in general is not of hate. is it?
It is not. Actually, ingrained within it is, you know, acceptance, education, hope, and challenging people and their mentality.
Kaylin's saying, and love.
Love, and then Jules is adding as well.
And Jules is saying, I think it is about provoking conversation and understanding and getting everyone's perspective rather than ignoring what doesn't apply to you. That's my main theme for the show. And what I want the takeaway to be is that we should have hard conversations and not be afraid of them.
Rather than basically what is said in the show of live and let live.
Exactly.
And you have the support of Moises Kaufman and the Tectonic Theater, who originally produced it and wrote it. Judy Shepherd, and I forgot her husband's name.
Dennis
Shepherd. Matthew Shepherd's parents are going to be at the theater on opening, and there'll be a talk back. Is that right?
That is correct.
Wow.
That is correct. Yep. We have their support. We have Matthew Shepherd Foundation support.
What a huge honor.
Oh, it's very, very honored that they're coming to watch, yes.
And we will say, since the death of Matthew Shepherd, especially Judy Shepherd has been very, very vocal and has become an activist for LGBTQ rights and trying to stamp out hate in the world. So I think it's great that you have their involvement. And then Moises Kaufman basically gave you permission to do this like at the drop of a hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's been sharing everything on social media when he sees our posts, all that. They've been very, very good. And the original actress who played the role of Romaine Patterson with their company, as well as in the movie she played Leigh Bondakowski, just moved to Austin with her partner.
Amazing.
And she's wanting to break into the theater world. So I've been connected to her to kind of start that introduction.
Good. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We love that. Well, we are just about out of time. When does this show open and how long does it play?
We open next Thursday, September the 7th, and we run through September the 16th, and people can find information at www.deafaustintheater.org. Just make sure you spell theater R-E, not E-R.
So, good question. I know we have a handful of theaters. What theater will it be at? Where would people, if people just want to show up, where would they go?
The absolutely fabulous Ground Floor Theater in East Austin.
Well, that's amazing. Well, all of y'all, I am so honored to have you on the show. I just want to end with one thing, and maybe Brian or Jules could take this. You know, Ground Floor Theater and Brian and I have a pretty long history of doing shows together, and theater producers tend to steer away from bringing in deaf actors, and we want to try to dissuade them from doing that. And, you know, people, you know, said it was a brave step for us, and I call that kind of poppycock. It wasn't a brave step. It was the right step. It's done nothing but make our shows better. So what would you tell? We have a lot of theater producers that listen to this show. What would you tell theater producers about bringing in a deaf artist to work with them, and whether it needs to be a whole show that features deaf people, or could you just put a deaf actor in your production of 12 Angry Men? Jules.
I would love to respond to that by saying, I've been dealing with this in the business for a long time, in film and theater both, and I see it similarly in terms of the fear of paying for interpreters, of paying for accommodation, and we are probably the most expensive disabled group of artists, and that's a huge barrier for us as artists. And we do see that many of us are not interested in causing problems for our theater companies and producers. We just want to work with them. And I will say that deaf theater is a gift, and deaf actors are a gift to the process. We contribute so much just being in the space. Everyone learns from these experiences working with us, and we have a totally different perspective on something that all the hearing people in the room will just be like, same old, same old. And we can shift that perspective in so many ways. So just be prepared to keep that in mind, that there might be creative ways of solving fundraising things or communication things. I mean, if you have a big budget for a sound designer or projection designer or whatever, you can have a budget for an interpreter. Just put it in the budget. This is Justin. Also, that kind of access is priceless. That kind of contribution is priceless. This is Jules. Basically, I get it, but you'll have so much fun with us, I promise. Wonderful. And as I always say, when you go deaf, you never go back.
But to also add to that, what's also important is equal representation in the room. Because if you're doing stories about deaf or you have a deaf actor in there, you want to ingrain deaf culture in it, you need to have a deaf expert there to consult. You need to have a DASL, a director of artistic sign language. Honestly, my opinion, you should have a deaf co-director. Some producers, some directors will only do like, you're my assistant. No, you don't know this content. You don't know this culture, this anything. I'm the expert here. I want, you know, I deserve equal space in the room. And stories need to be by deaf. If it's going to be about our culture, everything, that's where it's representative and it needs to be appropriate.
Sure, those representations are super duper 100%. Important. Mm-hmm. And if you are going to cast a deaf actor in a show that is not traditionally deaf, it's not necessarily, you don't have to change your entire staff to do that. Nope. So you just, you know, you need interpreters and you need an open mind and you need to learn about the culture. Exactly. So y'all, thank y'all so much. I will say that we are recording this on August 30th, 2023. This particular interview is going to go in what I call my evergreen show. So if I would drop dead, they would play a show. And this one I think is important enough to put in so that we can play this at any time. So thank y'all for that. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having us here. We are honored to be here, as always.
Wonderful. That was Brian Cheslick. Thank you. That was Brian Cheslick, Jules Dameron, Miriam Rockford, Kaylin Aaron Lozano, Joey Antonio, Justin Chakrasan, and Lemon, who's there in the background, has been very quiet, but I'm just going to acknowledge that she's there. They are all part of Deaf Austin Theater's production of The Laramie Project, which opens on the 7th and plays through, Brian, help me, I didn't write it down.
The 16th.
The 16th.
And then we are recording it, so there will be a live streaming on October 12th.
Excellent. And you can get information at deafaustintheater.org. I went back and forth with what I wanted to play here, but I just, you know, I'm going to the activist in me, and we're going to play from Hedwig and the Angry Inch, yeah. Wicked Little Town.
Good we'll choice.
Right back. And if you've got no we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Carl.
Hello.
Carl, that was such an amazing interview, don't
you
think? That
was fantastic. I learned so much.
Yeah, there's so much to learn from the deaf community, and to see a troupe of actors that come in and do that work, it's really amazing.
Yeah.
I did not mention this on the show, so I should do this. For those of us that have the disability of not speaking American Sign Language, this is also voiced. So you can go in and see the show as a hearing person. You will hear all the words. So it's not that you're going to have to read through super titles, although there are super titles as well. So again, that's Deaf Austin Theater, The Laramie Project, Ground Floor Theater, opens on the 7th and plays through whenever Brian said it plays through. I can never remember.
16th, I think.
Thank you. But we're going to switch gears and talk to the very, very good friends at the Vortex and their devised dance piece called Mother Tree. And here in the studio, we have the artistic director and the creator of this piece, or one of the creators, I guess, Bonnie Cullum.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here.
And the choreographer, Tony Bravo.
Thank you for coming.
Hi, Tony. And two, I'm guessing, performers, Ali Rosa and Callie Crow.
Hi. Hello.
Did I pronounce the names right?
Yes.
Kaylee.
Kaylee, I told you I was going to mispronounce it. They told me the proper pronunciation while we were off the air, and I knew I was going to blow it. So, Bonnie, tell us about this show.
Well, we are really thrilled to be doing this work in progress of Mother Tree, which is a piece that I've been dreaming on for several years. And so we got together, we did some workshop stuff in the spring, and then we brought this wonderful group of people together the last couple of weeks to put together what is going, it's part of the show. It's not the whole show. We'll do the whole show next year. Okay. But I'm trying to get some film and some video content to be able to tell people about the show and to be able to get that funding, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Funding. Ever important. So would you call this a workshop?
No, it's fully produced. Okay. It has lights and costumes and sound. It's probably about 40 minutes. And we're opening it tonight with the Blue Moon.
Oh, Blue Moon.
So this is a Blue Moon performance. And then we're just doing it for 4 nights. But I'm super excited about it.
So this is billed as a devised piece with movement and music. And Tony, you are billed as the choreographer. But I'm guessing a choreographer in a devised piece is more of an orchestrator / conductor.
Yes and no.
Okay.
I created a few movements as vocabulary, and then I taught them to some of the performers that are going to be on stage tonight. And then together with that as a base and the concepts of how to look at the different physical and also emotional relationships we have with trees, we build a larger vocabulary and then phrases, and then the phrases were coupled to some poetry, some song. And so it's a few vignettes that are full of motion, but it's not only motion. It's live music. It's singing. And also, it's sort of like a first installment.
Uh-huh.
We're going to keep on adding and working and reworking.
Right, because you don't have my piece in there yet.
That's right. Which tree are you, Lisa?
I'm the elk. The elm.
The elm.
Which looks like an elk. Well, that's amazing. So the music is done live, so it's not pre-recorded music?
We have live music. We also have some pre-recorded text written by Sarah Saltwick.
Oh, yes. I saw Sarah's name in there.
And so the text was pre-recorded, and we're dancing to it. And then there is live music also with the text. We even have a French horn, a violin, guitar,
ooh,
various percussion, drums. The old rain stick has come out.
Yes. You can never have, you know, how do you do something without a rain stick?
Exactly. It's very hard.
Not in a blue moon.
Not in a blue moon. Well, that sounds amazing. And Kaylee and Allie, tell us about what y'all are doing with this show. We'll start whoever wants to start.
Yeah.
And then get right up on the microphone.
Oh, yeah. So it feels like to me it's more of an immersive movement piece and less of like a dance and choreography sort of show. It feels like it's very cathartic and you're really trying to embody a tree and the forest and a tableau of all these trees together. So it's less like showy and more like coming from, you know, your gut.
Echoing off of that, so much I think that's been exciting about this process is it's really echoed what we're exploring, really echoed with what we're exploring with trees. It's been a very organic process with some moments of slower growth as we explored through the workshops, and then moments of fast growth as we came together in the past couple of weeks to put together the show that we're going to have on stage. And we're exploring lots around interconnected webs of trees and how trees communicate, and likewise on stage, our ensemble, we're an interconnected web as well, and really feeding off each other with organic impulses throughout the show, and the same way that trees send the organic impulses of electrical impulses out as well. So you're really getting inside the kind of brain mechanism and world of trees, which has been really exciting to work on.
Amazing. So now the two of you, I'm guessing, are your performers. Are you primarily dancers in general and in this piece in specific?
I am not a dancer.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You made it sound like I insulted you.
No, it's not insulting, and it's not in a way. It's really, for me, it's just opening up to the dance world. I see myself as a performer and a singer and an actress, but I struggle with dance, but with this experience, it's really allowed me to step out of my comfort zone.
Great.
And really just let go. Yeah.
If I may add a little bit here, the dance that you're going to see is not of any dance style or genre. Uh-huh. This is movement created specifically for the show, as in we're using our physicality to represent the forest physicality, the underground, the above the ground, the sky. So it is more of a kinetic picture than an actual kick and turn and then suffer.
I have a movement background, but I think I've been doing some dramaturgy on the piece as well, and being in the ensemble, it's been really interesting to feel also kinetically the dramaturgy of the piece and what's all unfolding as far as themes and really being inside of it. I feel like the experience of the movement and everything is from the gut, and as you were saying, and very... all of us in this kind of connected space.
So, Bonnie, two things. First of all, we talk about the ensemble. Tell me how many people are in the ensemble, and also, and they're kind of related, but not really, what was your inspiration for creating this piece?
There are 12 people on stage. This is really addressing the urgency of climate crisis, and this time that we are in is... This is becoming a really crucial issue for the whole world. So when we think about trees, we think about the trees as the lungs of the planet. And if we could learn to communicate like the trees do, if we could connect like the mycorrhizal network underneath the ground that is helping all the trees. I mean, there's all this tree science. This is new science. But they have learned how the trees are not only communicating, but sharing resources.
Sure.
And if we could figure this out better as human beings, if we could learn from the trees, I think we would have some more tools to use in through environmental activism. But yes, in this really critical time that we are in with trying to transform our industrial society to a more life-sustaining civilization.
Well, amazing. It sounds great. Yeah. I'm assuming this is in the indoor stage.
Yes, inside.
Although it sounds so outdoorsy to me.
I think when we do the final production, there will be an outdoor component, but not yeah.
Awesome.
Those of us that know the Vortex, and who doesn't know the Vortex, know that there's a whole campus, and an outside would have made sense. Although not at this time of year.
Not in August.
No. But we're out of time. I want to make sure we have enough time to play a little bit of the piece of music. It's spoken word, and we're going to play that as we go out. We're going to let folks listen to about a minute of it. So I just want to thank you. Oh, tell us when it happens. We open tonight.
Tonight,
how long are you playing?
4 nights through the 2nd of September at 8 o'clock.
Okay, and where do folks go to get information?
It's at vortexrep.org.
Great. Bonnie, thank you so much. And the whole group, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
That was Bonnie Cullum, Tony Bravo, Ali Rosa, Kaylee Crow, all of the Vortex's production of The Mother Tree that opens tonight on the 30th of August and plays through September 2nd. More information at vortexrep.org. And this we're going to play about a minute of We Spread from Mother Tree.
It's Pando. It's called
Pando. Oh, I think the file name said
Correct.
We Spread. And you did in your email to me said Pando.
That's
so this
right.
is totally my fault. And I'm assuming, is this written by Sarah Saltwick?
The text is by Sarah Saltwick.
Okay, and who's performing?
It's 5 different people.
It's 5 different people. So let's listen to it, and we'll come back after about a minute.
We are shaking in Utah.
Utah?
Large and many.
Many.
Growing.
Over
the mountains.
We house animals.
We spread. Our eyes are watching heroes and children.
Make a crown for your dead
if they are dear to you.
We spread.
The deer are returning. The birds fly home. After a fire. We spread back first.
Acres on acres.
12,000 years young.
40,000 limbs
stem from the same body.
We are back. You are still listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP. We've only got just a minute to just wrap up. I do want to say we did not get to our local section. Feel free to go to atxtheater.org. There's a wonderful listing. And that's where you can go to find out to everything theater here in Austin, Texas. atxtheater.org. Carl, thank you so much for coming here again.
Boy.
Hold on, I'm going to turn your microphone on and then you can say that again.
Oh, I said always, anytime.
I just love having you on here with me and it means the world.
It's fun. It's always fun. Fun fact, Tony Bravo and she taught me in high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
that's how we know each other.
I feel like, Tony and Bonnie are some of the people I've known longest here in Austin, Texas. So that's it for Offstage and On the Air. Coming up next is the Austin Cooperative Hour. And this week we have the Austin Common Radio Hour with John Hoffner, who's here trying to wrench the microphone away from me once again, but I'm not going to let him have it. I think Nicole will be back next week, but otherwise you got me. I'll be back next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. And you know, I always try to find new music that's coming out. We actually featured this on the show a few days ago, but it's actually physically out now that you can get it. This is There Is Hope from Sideways the Musical. We'll see you next week.
On the ropes, not a cent. And I can't pay the rent. But there's hope, there is hope, there is hope. When I was married in despair, God, it wasn't fair.